streets are screaming now. Greetings, all you 99 percenters. This is your host, Dr. Jack Rasmus, Alternative Visions. Okay. Today's show, we're going to do two things. One, we're going to provide a recap and update for last week's debt ceiling 2.0 deal. Our last show, as we were talking and making predictions, the settlement was in progress. And that was reached last Wednesday. Okay, our prediction was and has been for weeks and months that there would be a deal on this debt ceiling. And, of course, we had a deal. Yeah, there's a little twist. They're kicking the can down the road again for another 60 to 90 days. Well, at least that's not down the road as far as they were kicking last time with the debt ceiling deal reached in August 2011. They kicked it down the road for almost 18 months. Okay, this time 16, maybe they just kicked it off the curb, let's say, instead of down the road. And they will be revisiting. And in the interim, negotiating. And December 13th is the deadline of sorts. You know what these deadlines mean. Deadlines aren't really deadlines. December 13th is when they're supposed to come up, both sides, with some agreement on what kind of cuts to make, what kind of deficit cuts to make, how to keep the government going again, because they've only funded it, you know, for 3 months up until January. Middle of January. So they got to continue funding the government, which means they're still negotiating about the 2014 budget. That's really the same topic, you know, fund the government. Well, you got to have a budget to fund the government. So those two discussions are really linked with each other. And they've got 60 to 90 days to come up with how to fund the government longer term. How much longer term? Well, we'll have to see. They no longer pass budgets for a whole year. They pass it in increments, in pieces. And each time they have a fight over it. Okay, so the budget thing is the one issue. The government shutdown, of course, was the one issue. And then we had the debt ceiling issue on top of that. In other words, to fund the government, you got to borrow some more money. To borrow some more money, it's going to raise the deficit. Then you got to raise the debt ceiling in order to accommodate raising the deficit. All these two things are all tied together. But what's going to happen with the new 60-90-day delay is they're going to split these out in terms of time, unlike what we've just seen. They sort of overlapped with each other, debt ceiling, government shutdown, budget. Right. So what they're going to do now is deal with the debt ceiling in February, February 7th. So clearly they're going to break them apart now and deal with the budget, the government shutdown and funding in January, and then deal with the debt ceiling. Well, today I want to talk a little bit of a recap on this deal, this debt ceiling temporary government shutdown deal. And then I want to get on to another related topic, and that's whatever happened to the sequester? Remember the sequestered? Fancy word for another $1.2 trillion in cuts, spending-only cuts. Remember that? You go back to August 2011, the first debt ceiling 1.0 deal. That was $1 trillion in discretionary spending only. Cuts, $1 trillion, non-defense discretionary spending, education, transport, and so on and so forth. They cut $1 trillion in August of 2011. And part of that deal was a deferred additional $1.2 trillion in spending cuts that would take effect January of this year, 2013. That's the sequester. So $1 trillion plus another $1.2 trillion. Now, the $1.2 trillion sequester, about half of that was earmarked for defense cuts, and the other half additional discretionary spending cuts. So $2.2 trillion in spending-only cuts, three-fourths of which, roughly, was non-defense, and a fourth of which was defense. $2.2 trillion. Now, this sequestered cuts were put off until March of this year, and then they started taking effect. And they have been taking an effect. But the effect has been relatively minimal up until October of this year. Now, in the full fiscal year, October 2014 to September 2013 to September 2014, that's the federal government's fiscal year. Now, this thing, this sequestered thing, is going to really start biting economically. Now it's becoming a problem. But, you know, it's kind of below the radar as a problem, isn't it? Everyone's been focusing on the new budget and funding the government and the debt ceiling extension. But behind it all is also what to do about this sequestered $1.2 trillion now starting to hit the economy. This government shutdown has cost the government and the economy, GDP, tens of billions of dollars taken out of the economy. And we'll see the impact of that on fourth quarter GDP. Already it's projected to be tens of billions, maybe 100 billions of total dollars impact. And that's not counting the debt ceiling fiasco and what impact that will have on psychological expectations, business spending, and so forth, and consumer spending. The economy was already weakening before all this happened, as we've been pointing out. And how much effect this government shutdown and this debt ceiling will have on the fourth quarter and beyond remains to be seen. But it's all a question of how much of a negative effect. It's not a question of positive effect. But behind this is this sequester that's also beginning to bite at the same time. Okay, we want to talk about this sequester. What's the impact? What's the likely outcome of this? So we got three issues here still with us. How much is the budget going to be increased and the government funded as a result? What are you going to do with the debt ceiling? And what are you going to do with the sequester? Three big items, none of which have been resolved and are hanging over the heads of the economy. Now, let's back up a little bit and make a note of the fact that this $2.2 trillion in spending amounts to taking out of the economy three times the stimulus that Obama passed in 2009, $787 billion, $2 billion extra change here with cash for clunkers, automobile purchasing, first-time home buyers, et cetera. So now let's say $800 billion put into the economy in 2009. Well, in 2011 and 12 and 13, we've taken out three times that amount. Well, the latter is called austerity. What we gave in a token way with an inadequate stimulus program in 2009, we've taken away two and three times afterwards. Well, no wonder the economy is not recovering. We got an economic recovery that's less than half of what's normal from all other recoveries from recession. We just can't get the economy going again. And, of course, the Tea Publican faction in the Republican Party and Republicans really point to that and say, oh, it's a terrible recovery. Yes, it is. But, you know, you guys are significantly responsible for this. You're the guys who are pushing the spending cuts, including the sequester. You're the guys who want more cuts. You're the guys who want more tax cuts for the rich. You're the guys who made sure that the fiscal cliff deal of last December went into effect in January. allowed $4 trillion, $4 trillion, folks, of tax cuts, mostly for the rich and investors. You know, we wouldn't be anywhere near talking about this if we had just let the Bush tax cuts expire. And $4 trillion would have been added to the U.S. Treasury, $4 trillion over the next decade. You wouldn't have to talk about sequester. You wouldn't have to talk about government shutdown and government spending and budgets. It would all be resolved. Oh, we got to protect those Bush tax cuts for the rich, folks. One of the reasons the economy is also not doing so well is those tax cuts aren't having much of an effect. Oh, by the way, let me say one more thing here. Tax cuts, Bush tax cuts for the rich and investors, $4 trillion, 80% of which went to, you know, the top 10% households. At the same time, we raised the payroll tax on everybody else. Okay, so back to this, why the economy is not growing. Well, one reason is we've taken 2 to 3 times back out of spending that we put in 2009. Also, a lot of the 2009, over $300 billion, was tax cuts. Listen, in addition to the Bush tax cuts of $4 trillion here in 2013 that have been made permanent, back in 2009, over $300 billion was tax cuts for businesses. Well, what have businesses done with that $300 billion in 2009 and the $4 trillion since? What have wealthy folks done? Have they invested? Created jobs in the U.S.? No. What did they use that money for? Oh, buying back stock, paying out dividends, investing in emerging markets offshore, or just stuffing their money in tax havens or their corporate subsidiaries offshore. You know, big multinational corporations have over $2 trillion stuffed in their offshore subsidiaries that they refuse to bring back and pay taxes on. $2 trillion. Biggest corporate profits boom since the Second World War in the last few years. So that money never got trickled down, you see. That's the problem. There's plenty of money out there. We, you know, handed out all kinds of money to investors and corporations, and they just haven't invested, at least not at home. That's another reason why we haven't got a recovery here. Now, we've taken $2.2 trillion out, and we're giving big tax cuts, over $4 trillion. Right? You would, no wonder. I mean, it's not rocket science, right? Of course, Obama is partly responsible for this. He never really proposed a real jobs program any time since 2009. And the capital infrastructure spending projects were a small amount and stretched over 10 years. Well, no wonder. No real projects. And the projects that we have are very capital intensive, not labor intensive, not hiring things. Right? The recovery in housing has always favored the banks. Whatever money we spent was to try to bribe and provide incentives for banks to refinance. And now, only now, this year, they started doing that, but we'll have another show on that. But no jobs program. Well, you know, these are all the reasons why we haven't got a recovery, folks, but the sequester is part of this picture. Okay. Let's start with some basics. First, the sequestered spending is $1.2 trillion. The impact started this March. The impact's only been partial since March. Okay? The full impact just started here this month. Okay? We haven't focused on this as we've been preoccupied with the debt ceiling and the government shutdown. Now, another fact, while about half of this sequester is defense-related, it actually hasn't been implemented as much on defense as on non-defense. So the impact on defense has been shielded somewhat, while the impact on other spending has not. Politicians have been protecting the defense spending, but allowing other cuts per the sequester to go into effect this year. And now politicians want to reverse the sequester spending cuts for defense, which means something else has got to make up the difference, doesn't it? Either more discretionary cuts, or guess what? Let's look at Social Security, Medicare. That's what the big focus is now on. You see, the strategy of both parties, or I should say both wings of the same party, Republicans and Democrats, was moving along smoothly and nicely this summer. You know, they were about to embrace each other in the new dance. I call this the well-orchestrated dance. They're well on their way. Things were going smoothly. You know, Obama had already proposed last March, when he issued his proposed budget for 2014 to take effect this October 1st, when he announced that, he already included $630 billion of cuts in Social Security and Medicare over the next decade. $630 billion. Now, that's a floor on which negotiations with Republicans could begin. He also included a number of significant tax cuts for businesses. And then he's always said, since the election year, 2012, that he is for cutting the top tax rate on corporations from the current 35% to 28%. So he's on record publicly. Let's cut corporate taxes by a massive amount. And let's cut Social Security and Medicare by a historically massive amount. And this is the beginning point for current negotiations. Well, no wonder the Republicans, John Boehner in the House and McConnell in the Senate this summer, were saying, okay, the next round is going to be entitlement cuts. They call these entitlements, you see, Social Security and Medicare, entitlements. Look, these are wages. These are wages that folks gave up their entire life to put into the Social Security Trust Fund and into Medicare that they would hope to collect once they retired. These are wages. These are wage cuts. You know, and we're seeing wage cuts in all kinds of forms here. Those who are still working are getting wage cuts, benefit cuts, wage cuts. Those who have put their money in pension plans are seeing the value of those plans collapse, or employers and state and local governments reducing their benefits. Those are wage cuts. You see, the money you put into pensions and 401ks, that's deferred wages. The money we put into Social Security and Medicare, that's social wages. It's all wages. It's all wage cutting, all concession bargaining going on. Except when you talk about social wages and deferred wages, we're not even at the bargaining table. At least, you know, workers who negotiate a wage cut, at least they have a say in it, can agree to it or not agree to it. We can't even have a say in it anymore. It's wage cutting across the board, everywhere going on. No wonder median family income has been dropping every year for the last decade, especially since 2009. And if median family income is dropping, well, that means people aren't spending and consuming, and that means the economy isn't going anywhere, bouncing along the bottom. Okay. Let's get back to the sequester. Okay, some of the basics. They're shielding the defense cuts, much of it so far. But now, when the cuts really start, sequester cuts really start taking effect this fiscal year, right now, they got to find ways to cut even more elsewhere if they want to restore the military spending cuts. Look, there's a shift in U.S. military policy underway. Right? The Army has had its war in the Middle East. They're scaling down the spending on the ground wars in the Middle East. Doesn't mean they're leaving these countries. They're just scaling down. Called Overseas Contingent Operations. That's in addition, by the way, to the formal Pentagon budget, OCOs. Okay, so they're scaling down the wars in the East, Middle East, right? And they're going to shift to spending on Navy and Air Force war toys in Asia. Right? Got to keep those procurements going. Right? Contractors keep buying more war toys, but manpower is going to be reduced. You don't need as many boots on the ground when you're in the air or on the ocean. Okay, so manpower will be reduced, both in service and retired vets, as they shift to Asia. Got to have some big enemy to keep military-industrial complex going. Okay. The politics of the present regarding the sequester is how do we protect the defense cuts called for in the sequester so that we can continue this shift and beef up our war toys for the Navy and Air Force. Right? Well, we can downgrade the spending on the boots on the ground in the Middle East, but that's not enough. We got to find other spending cuts somewhere if the sequester $1.2 trillion is going to continue and go through if we want to reduce defense spending. Okay, some budget facts. Look at some budget facts, folks. Right. Social Security, as a spending, as a percent of the total U.S. budget in 1992 was 24%. Now, keep in mind, Social Security has its own dedicated tax to pay for it. This doesn't come out of discretionary revenue. This does not come out of the income tax you pay to the federal government. This comes out of the payroll tax. Social Security and Medicare. So, okay, let's put the revenue from the payroll tax into total budget government revenue. Social Security in 1992 was 24% of the total of all revenue. In 2012, it was 23%. Despite millions more retirees, baby boomers, claiming Social Security and Medicare. The number of retirees has been going up, but our spending as a percent for Social Security of total budget has gone down. Where's the crisis? Okay. They're saying, oh, but in the future, you're going to get even more baby boomers retiring in Social Security, claiming Social Security. Well, look at the Social Security trustees' reports. It comes out every year. Okay? The retirement program for Social Security, the biggest program in Social Security, is fully funded. There is no shortfalls. Fully funded. Now, within Social Security program, there is a program called SSDI, Social Security Disability Insurance. This is for folks who are totally unable to work anymore because of a disability and can claim Social Security benefits before they are 66, 67, or early benefits at 62, right? They can claim it early if they're disabled and can't work. That's a supplementary program within Social Security. Now, that has been running in the red. We've added over 2 million people since the economic crisis to those roles, SSDI roles. And, of course, the expenditures are going to get out of whack a little bit. Now, the reason why we have is because of the economic crisis. Folks who had a disability, barely able to work, see the economic crisis. And they go on SSDI instead of unemployment insurance, which is insufficient, doesn't last as long, etc. All right, so we've had a boost in that. Well, address that problem. It's a temporary problem related to the economic crisis particularly, so address that problem. Don't take it out on the retirement program and the other almost 40 million people collecting Social Security benefits, and that's what Obama has promised to do. He's going to cut the Social Security cost of living increase. It's called the chain CPI. Look, you don't need to know the technicality of how it's done. All you need to know is your Social Security adjustments every year will be less. He's going to take it out on them. It has nothing to do with SSDI, where the real problem is, right? But, you know, it saves money in the budget that can be spent to restore the defense spending cuts effectively, ultimately, you know, because it all adds up into the budget. Okay, so Social Security today is less of a percentage, the cost of the total budget, than it was 20 years ago, right? Despite an increase in retirees, and the projected increases can easily be dealt with. How? As I've said many times, and by the way, said in a recent video presentation that I'll reference here shortly, as I've said many times, you know, you can solve any amount of increase in the number of baby boomers going on Social Security by simply adjusting the cap to the tax. What's the cap? Right now, Social Security, you pay 6.2%, the employer pays 6.2% of your wages, up to a maximum amount you make every year. I think it's like $116,000 or something like that. Anybody making over $116,000 no longer pays the 6.2%. or 12.4 of the employer, no longer has to pay it. Well, what's happened is we've raised the cap slower than the wealthier wage earners, those folks making well over $100,000 a year, slower than their income has increased every year. Their wage, salary, income is increasing faster than we've been adjusting the base, $116,000. So guess what? They're only paying 85% of what they're supposed to pay. Now, it's supposed to be on all earned income, all wage and salary income, the Social Security payroll tax. Well, over the years, the last 20 years, they've been creeping up and up in their income and getting a deal. You know, those making under $100,000, they end up paying the 6.2 for the full year. Well, those making over $100,000, well over, you know, only pay to about September, and then they don't pay. They get 6.2% more in their paycheck. Well, that's the cap. Well, get rid of the cap. That's all you got to do. Just get rid of the cap, and you're going to bring in hundreds of billions of more money into the Social Security Trust Fund. That will more than, far more than, able to absorb the increase in the baby boomers and probably also pay for any of the SSDI problem that we have. That's all you got to do. You don't have to cut the cost of living adjustment. Just make everyone pay the 100% the way they were supposed to intended under the law. Scrap the cap. That's all you got to do. And now if you really want to fund Social Security and pay for Medicare for All in the process, all you have to do is make all kinds of income pay the Social Security payroll tax. You know, there's a lot of very wealthy people, the wealthy 1%, who, by the way, since 2009, have gotten 95% of all the income gains in this country in 4 years. 95% of it went to the wealthiest 1%. What an abomination. You don't hear politicians talking about how to do anything about that, do you? 95% of all the income gains all went to the 1%. That's not my numbers. That's from University of California, Berkeley, Professor Manuel Saez, you know, who's been writing about this stuff since 2002. You know, and finally, the liberals have gotten the message here, and, you know, the Robert Reichs and the Paul Krugmans, oh, well, you know, and the Stiglitz's and so forth. They finally discovered it 10 years after this professor in Berkeley has been talking about it. By the way, I was talking about it in my 2005 book, The War at Home, The Corporate Offensive from Reagan to Bush. I referred to Professor Saez's data back then, and I showed what policies and programs since Reagan have amounted to $1 trillion a year income shift from the wealthy and corporations, or to the wealthy and corporations, from the 110 million people who work for wages in this country. Middle class, the working class, right? Yeah, The War at Home, Corporate Offensive from Reagan to Bush. It's on my website, on my blog. If you want to read the policies that are responsible over 25 years for this $1 trillion every year income shift, just read that book. And, of course, it's gotten worse since then. During Bush's time, the wealthy 1% were getting 65% of all the income gains during his term. Well, under Obama, they're getting 95% of all the income gains. So income equality is getting increasingly worse. And because it's all concentrated at the top, it doesn't flow into consumption. And that means 70% of the economy, and that means we don't get real consumption stimulus in the economy. So what do the rich folks do with all that money? Well, they put in offshore tax havens in the Cayman Islands and 27 other places in the world. The IRS has identified as special jurisdictions for tax havens. Or they invest in emerging market funds to help China and Brazil expand. Right? Or they invest in derivatives around the world that don't produce any jobs or income for anybody else. Right? Or they push it off in their foreign subsidiaries if they're corporations like Apple and Microsoft, so they don't have to pay taxes. Or they buy back their stock, drive their stock prices up, give the money to their shareholders, right? Pay more dividends. That's what they've been doing with all this money. But this 95% gain... Okay, let's get back to our budget facts. I was saying, to recap, 24% of all spending on Social Security in 1992 and 23% today. And all you got to do is scrap the cap, and you got no problem for the next 75 years. All right, let's talk about defense spending and non-defense spending. That's not Social Security. But first, let's take a break here. We're halfway through. That's a good point. This is Jack Rasmus, Alternative Visions. Come back. We'll talk more about defense spending, health care, and other discretionary spending.
So you use what you've got, and you learn to make do. You take the old, you make it new.
Okay, Jack Rasmus, Alternative Visions. Let's continue here. We're looking at the budget and some facts about how much Social Security and other mandatory spending constitutes of the total budget and how that's changed over the years. And then we want to look at defense spending and non-defense discretionary spending, and then health care. Okay, so once again, Social Security, 24% of all federal spending in 1992, 23% today. Other mandatory spending programs, 17% of total government spending in 1992, 16% today. So in other words, mandatory spending has declined by 2% of total U.S. spending over the last 20 years. Mandatory spending programs are down. And again, some argue that, well, it's going to go up, though. You know, well, all you need to do is scrap the cap, and you got no problem. All right. Let's look at discretionary spending as opposed to mandatory spending. Mandatory means, politicians can't do anything about it. It's in previous laws, can't be changed, and so forth, and it's going to happen. Discretionary spending, on education and transport, and all these things. And, of course, defense is discretionary spending. Well, how much has non-defense discretionary spending increased in 20 years? 1992 was 19% of the total U.S. budget. Today it's 19% of total U.S. budget, despite all the non-defense discretionary spending that's been made because of trying to get the economy going again. 19%. It hasn't changed. Okay? So Social Security, mandatory, not a problem. Non-defense spending, discretionary, not a problem. Where the issue lies is defense spending and health care spending. Okay. Well, let's look at defense spending. In 1992, 26% of the budget. Today, 20% of the budget. Well, but wait a minute, folks. Stop. 20%, that's Pentagon. And what the politicians have done is put the spending on the wars off budget. They call that contingent operations, overseas contingent operations. So you got to add that back in to that 20%, and it thus goes up. Now, the Pentagon spending and the overseas contingent operations spending is not the whole defense spending picture. Pentagon does not equal defense spending. There's a whole bunch of other kinds of defense spending that are stuffed away in other budget categories in the U.S. budget that are, in effect, defense spending, but doesn't show up as defense spending. What are these? Well, energy. All the spending on oil and so forth, fuels, et cetera, for the Air Force, for the Army, and Navy, and so forth, that's in the Energy Department budget. How about Homeland Security? Rising $50-60 billion a year, every year. All right, well, that's in another category. How about veterans benefits? Well, that's in another category. Military pensions, you know, for all the officers and admirals, that's in another category. How about the CIA with its own private army now? We don't even know how much they spend. They don't even put that in a category. That's off budget. Same with the National Security Agency. That's off budget. State Department has a military budget. And then there's this thing called the black budget, black project budgets. These are secret investments, new technologies and so forth, that don't show up anywhere. And they're estimated somewhere between $50 and $75 billion a year. Off budget, black projects off budget. You know, you add all this up, you're close to about $1 trillion a year in defense spending. Right. So this whole idea that we're down to 20% is nonsense. It's up. Now, what about health care? In 1992, 14% of the U.S. budget. 2012, 22%. Ah, there's a problem in health care spending. But what is that problem? That's the key question. Is it Medicare running amok? Everybody's getting so much more Medicare services? No. Look at Medicare. Three programs. Part A, hospitalization. Part B, physicians and doctors. Part D, prescription drugs. If you go to the trustees, the Medicare trustees' reports, what you will see is that Part A is fully funded for the next 10 years. No problem. Part B is now fully funded for the next 10 years. The big problem of costs is Part D, prescription drugs. Now, why is that? Well, that's because when it was passed under George W. Bush, the prescription drugs Part D plan in 2005, they provided no way to pay for it. $50 billion a year, no way to pay for it. No tax, no payroll tax for it. To be funded totally out of deficits. Well, no wonder you got a problem. You're not paying for it. On top of that, the Bush 2005 drug program gave carte blanche to drug companies to charge whatever they want. And you couldn't even negotiate. Even the government couldn't negotiate states, cities, with the drug companies to get a better deal because we're going to bring you millions of customers. No, we couldn't even do that. They charge whatever they want. And they've been price gouging for years. You know, if you got cancer, there's drugs for it. But you're going to pay $20,000-$30,000 a year for the pills. How many people can afford that? How many insurance companies will pay for that? Okay, so prescription drugs are totally out of control, the cost. No cost controls on these guys, plus no way to pay for it. Yes, that's a problem within the Medicare program, but Medicare itself is not a problem. Oh, well, then we get to this argument, but going forward, you know, you know, maybe not today, maybe not in the next 10 years, Part A, Part B are not a problem, but going forward, we got all these people. Well, go back to the trustees, Medicare trustees report. They said you could cover any of the shortfall after 10 years with a simple 0.25% increase in the Medicare payroll tax. 0.25%. You know, we only pay 1.45%. That's ridiculous when you think about it, right? A tax of less than 0.5%, you get Medicare coverage from age 65 until you die. I mean, there's no more efficient program than that anywhere that I can even imagine. Do you think you're going to get that kind of health care coverage by paying 1.5% of your income to a private insurance company? Look, most insurance premiums now, union premiums, good employer insurance, union insurance plans, will cost almost $2,000 a month. They call those Cadillac plans, in insurance premiums only. And what do you get for it? You don't get anything near as good as Medicare. 1.45%. So if you raise it 0.25%, you know, 0.25%, according to the trustees, no problem for the next 30 years. Right? No problem. After 10 years, another 0.25%. So 0.5%. So you pay 1.9%, 95% for guaranteed Medicare, medical coverage for the rest of your life. So what are their solutions for this? Well, their whole idea is to attack Medicare. The problem's in the prescription drug side of this right now, Part D, and going forward, a little token 0.25% is all you need to adjust it. Just like Social Security, a little adjustment to the cap or a little adjustment to solve the SSDI problem, and you got no problems for 75 years. And by the way, after another 20, 25 years, the seniors, number of seniors, the baby boomers, we're all going to disappear. So then the whole cost pressure goes down significantly. Look, is anyone talking about this, these tweaks to Social Security and Medicare is all you need to do? No, they're not talking about this, just like they wouldn't even talk about Medicare for All as the solution. They don't want you to hear these alternatives. By the way, if you want to take a look at my presentation I made to Progressive Democrats of America earlier this year, go to my website, Kikulos Productions, KYKLOSProductions.com. Just Google me. You'll see Kikulos Productions. Go to the video tab, and there's my 35-minute presentation on the facts about Social Security and Medicare and all that would only take little tweaks, you know, to deal with what is not a major problem. Oh, but why then are the Republicans and the Tea Republicans focusing on let's slash and burn Social Security and Medicare? Well, it's because they want to make the cuts there to restore the defense spending cuts and to give their friends, the corporations, their big tax cuts. Moving now through the House of Representatives under the title of the tax code overhaul. You know, look, the fiscal cliff $4 trillion was individual income tax cuts. This is all about corporate tax cuts. You know, they never do both at the same time. They always do one and then the other. That's what Bush did, individual tax cuts, you know, 2003, 2004, and then the business tax cuts in 2004 and 2005, industry by industry. And that's what they're doing now. Make no mistake, what's going on now in negotiations for the next 90 days is to figure out how we can retract these sequestered defense spending cuts that are now going to come and make more discretionary non-defense spending cuts. And how can we then cut Social Security and Medicare to enable even more corporate tax cuts? That's what it's all about. And unfortunately, Obama is well in line with this. $630 billion, Social Security, Medicare, right? Cut the corporate tax rate 28%. That's what Republicans want. The big issue is Obama wants some smoke and mirrors covers. He wants something to say he's closed tax loopholes, corporate tax loopholes. He wants to be able to say, see, I did this. Oh, it's revenue neutral. We're going to close the tax loopholes on the corporations, and then we're going to give them a 7% top tax rate, 35-28% cut, and it's going to be neutral. He needs that cover. He just can't cut corporate taxes, and he can't raise the cost cutting for Social Security and Medicare without something else to show for it. That's what he wants. He wants something to show for it. The tax loopholes are what he wants to show for it. And Republicans simply don't want to close the tax loopholes. They want the corporate tax rate cut. They want Social Security and Medicare cut. But they don't want no loopholes either. You know, loopholes will get you $5, $10 billion a year at most. The corporate tax rate, we're talking about tens of billions more. You know, they'll take with the one hand back and they'll give twice with the other to big corporations. This tax code thing is at the heart of these negotiations. It's in the background, but it's in the heart. It's the glue that will enable them to put together a deal, just as the fiscal cliff was all about tax cuts, stupid, as they say. It was a tax cliff for the rich that was eliminated. $4 trillion worth, right? And they let the $1.2 trillion sequester continue. But now they're going to deal with the sequester. You know, the most important thing is to let's relieve the pressure on the military here, which means someone else is going to pay more. Oh, Social Security, Medicare. You know, what it amounts to is this, quote, grandma will pay for Lockheed and Boeing continued record profits and for the big multinational companies fatter profits and bottom line with their tax cuts. Grandma's going to pay for that, right? Even though they're already sitting on $2 trillion in cash hoard in their offshore subsidiaries, refusing to bring it back, and none of them are being indicted for tax avoidance as a result, right? They're sitting on it. Yeah. Big tech companies, big pharma companies, big banks, et cetera. They're the big hoarders of their cash offshore. So we're going to start with $630 billion Social Security, Medicare cuts, and go from there. And we're going to start with a reduction to 28% corporate top tax rate and go from there. And all this would be avoidable if we just had not passed the $4 trillion Bush tax cuts last January. Back in August, as I said, Boehner and the Republicans said this is what they're going to do. Okay, and Obama was ready to go along with it, as long as he got some tax loopholes, smoke and mirrors, right? And as long as there's no default on the debt ceiling. Then the Republican faction and Republican Party jumped into this mix, upset it all here in September, injected this Obamacare issue into the negotiations, upset the apple cart, you know, for the big politicos in both parties. I predicted back then that the Tea Party grandstanding, you know, was just for midterm 2014 elections. You know, the Cruises and all these guys, you know, they're just posturing for their re-elections next year. And Cruz, of course, wants to inject himself into the running for the nomination for the Republican president. That's what that was all about in 2016. The Tea Party is a faction within the Republican Party. You know, let me correct myself. We don't have a one-party system with two wings, Republican-Democrat. Now what we got is a one-and-a-half-party system. There's a faction called the Tea Party within the Republican Party. Right? And I believe their strategy is they're either going to push the Republican Party traditionalist into their camp, or they're going to split it and reformulate it. I don't think they care if they split the Republican Party, as long as it reforms around them and their ideologies. I predicted, though, that they would back off eventually from this. Maybe I'll, you know, get some sort of token concession, right? And then the real boys, political boys, would return to the well-orchestrated dance. I wrote about this on my blog last December. It was all an orchestrated dance, this fiscal cliff thing, right? And they were going to this past summer, meet up again and dance again, 2.0, right? And then the Tea Parties upset the dance. But now the Tea Party, you know, got what they want. They got publicity. For their re-elections, well, if they could have gotten some concession, you know, they would have taken it. But there was no doubt that it was all a well-orchestrated game. But now the real dance begins again, right? The real dance between Obama, the Democrats, and the Republicans, Boehner and McConnell, and the Republicans. And negotiations are going to go on now. And behind the scene is the real tiebreaker, and that's big corporate America, the Business Roundtable, Chamber of Commerce, all these guys, who blocked with Obama last December to put pressure, along with Boehner and others, on the Tea Party to accept the fiscal cliff deal, which was a sweet deal for them. Some token tax hikes, you know, but they got permanent Bush tax cuts. And they got an even sweeter inheritance tax under Obama than they had under George W. Bush. Alternative minimum tax was sweetened. Pretty good deal. Okay, so in the background now we have the Business Roundtable and those guys now blocking with Obama again, you know, and with the traditionalists in the Republican Party. And they will come up with a deal here, I believe. There will be an agreement to cut the budget, cut Social Security, Medicare, even more than Obama has proposed before February, and there won't be another debt ceiling debacle in February 7th. That's been already decided. You know, Tea Party doesn't have to do it twice in order to get the notoriety it wants for the 2014 midterm elections. Look, this is about the midterm elections. All this Tea Party shenanigans are really about that. And Obama's holding firm, finally, is about that, too. Because if he doesn't take the House again, if the Democrats don't take the House, which is extremely difficult for them, then his entire 8 years is going to be a bust, his legacy. He can't get anything through. Right, what's he got? He got a recovery that's stumbling along halfway after 6 years. And he got a financial regulation, bank regulation bill, which is a joke. It's got so many holes in it. No one believes it's going to have any effect. And he got Obamacare. And Obamacare is $900 billion subsidy to the health insurance industry. This isn't a health care bill. This is a health insurance company bill. Only half of the uninsured are going to get any kind of coverage. And, of course, we see all the problems with it. And we'll see how this thing shakes out with Obamacare. But, you know, if they can't get enough people to sign up, if the penalties are too low and the subsidies are too low, they're not going to get people to sign up. It's going to take, you know, at least 6 months to see how this thing shakes out. But it could go belly up. We should have proposed a public option. But he quickly took that off the table because that wouldn't have benefited the health insurance companies. That was anathema to them, let alone Medicare, which they refused to even talk about. Okay. Sequestration is going to be in the middle of all these negotiations right now. Going forward, sequestration is going to be part of the Social Security, Medicare tax cuts. How are we going to retract? And they've all, both parties, by the way, have already are on record to retract the defense cuts element in the social in the sequester. They're both proposing increases in defense in this budget, increases over last year. Okay. At the same time, the Secretary of Defense Hagel is trying to scare everybody that, oh, if these things go through, we're going to have to cut two carrier task forces. We're going to have to cut 40,000 from the Army, 20,000 from the Marines, right? At the same time, they're buying 71 more F-35 jets. $400 billion program for the F-35 jets. $400 billion, which is being increased as we talk. Increased, not decreased. Oh, in other words, procurement. What's been shielded from the sequestered defense cuts? Well, the F-35, the KC-46 tanker, Boeing, aircraft carriers, Virginia-class submarines, DDG destroyers. Okay, all these are not even, are already off the cut list. All of these. So, you know, what this means is that they're going to keep the defense contractors and the procurement going because it's, you know, the next fight's the Navy Air Force spending over in Asia. They'll cut some personnel because they're going to, and some small arms and tanks because that ground war. Now, the Army had its shot for 12 years here, so, you know, let's let the Navy and Air Force have theirs. Okay. And this will be restored. You know, the defense spending will be restored. We're going to see, and that means they're going to have more cuts, discretionary spending, but they have to really attack Social Security and Medicare to make it all work. And that's the prediction. Where we're going with these negotiations, we'll stay on top of them over the course of the next several weeks. But that's the sequestered element in all of this. Okay, we'll see you next week. Jack Rasmus, Hope for the Vision. I'm